Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I'm your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great 4th of July weekend, whether you're listening to this show before the 4th of July on the podcast or actually on July 5th on live here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Hope it's a great weekend. Hope it's going to be filled with lots of fun for you. We're going to try to make it even a little bit more fun and interesting by bringing you up to date on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture. Joining me to do so, as he does so very often on the show, please welcome Jeremy Branch.
Hey, glad to be here. Thanks for having me. You know, I really love the 4th of July weekend. I feel like it's like the quintessential American holiday, right? You like hang out, cook food, blow stuff up.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's always a good time. It's definitely the quintessential American holiday in that it's not being celebrated in any other country. I mean, it's American Independence Day. It's not, you know, not exactly a holiday they're celebrating over in, Thailand or something.
Do you think they co-opted in the same way that we do, like, St. Paddy's Day or something like that? That would be kind of fun to see other countries celebrating the 4th of July, just kind of like the ritual side of it, but not the actual like symbolic side of it.
I would be interested to see how that works because, I think that's entirely possible. Like, you know, again, you know, St. Patrick's Day, Cinco de Mayo, yada, yada.
Uh-huh.
I would wonder what the interpretation in another country of July 4th would be. Would it be, you know, like overeating barbecue and apple pie and blowing stuff up, which I mean, is how we celebrate it. But the way that we celebrate, like, say, St. Patrick's Day is not the way the Irish celebrate it. The way we celebrate Cinco de Mayo
is not the way. It almost becomes like a caricature of it.
Yeah. So, like, how do you make even more of a caricature out of something that kind of is very much the stereotype that you would think of? Like, you would think other people, other outside countries would think the American stereotype is.
I would love to see it.
Like, I mean, the 4th of July kind of is the stereotype that you would expect. Like a good example, like in Ted Lasso, when he goes to the American-themed restaurant. Like, I don't know if you saw that episode. I don't know if you watched Ted Lasso.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, like, you know, they have these, you know, this America-themed restaurant. There's lots of America flags all over the place, and everything's oversized, and, you know. There's lots of ranch dressing, and, you know, I just don't know how you, like, the way that we celebrate some of these international holidays is, let's be honest, it's borderline racist.
A little bit.
It's borderline, maybe not racist, but culturally insensitive. It's borderline culturally insensitive.
If we have any listeners from the Philippines, England, Norway, Australia, Ireland, or Denmark, let us know how you celebrate Independence Day. We'd love to hear from you.
I want to know how it would be celebrated in a way that would be borderline insulting to Americans.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to figure out what it would take to insult us. I'm not sure. Maybe it's because I'm just so, you know, indoctrinated into what America is by having been born an American. And, well, I mean, at least for now, until, you know, they decide to take that away. I was born in the United States and I've lived my entire life in the United States. I don't know, like, I mean, they can't like just make everybody fat. Like,
we're actually working on that. So.
I mean, or you know, I mean, time. I guess, you know, like, I mean, they'd serve beer, I guess, but that would be part of an American 4th of July too.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I mean, like, it's not like, yeah, you know, I mean, I guess if they dressed up as Native Americans, but that's not really what 4th of July is either.
No.
So I don't know. That's an interesting challenge to see what the stereotypical 4th of July celebration in a foreign country would be. I have no clue whatsoever. That is interesting. I want to switch gears before we move into the meat of the show this week. Unfortunately, where I'm shifting gears, I'm going to severely downshift here, because we did have somebody pass away this week that, whether you know his name or not, is somebody that's very, very important to pop culture and to a lot of the entertainment that we talk about on this show, and that we that really makes up kind of the pop culture landscape. We lost a man named Jim Shooter this week. Jim Shooter was a comic book writer and editor, and actually early in his career, occasionally an artist too, who, again, is not maybe a name you don't know, but is a name you should know. This is someone who started writing comics professionally. His first story that was published was written when he was 13 years old. He was 14 by the time it was published, but he was 13 years old when he wrote it. Sent in submissions to DC Comics, and they caught the eye of an editor, and he liked them and wanted to buy them. Did not know that at the time that this was written by a teenager, like basically almost a preteen. But they hired him, and he went to work writing Superman and writing the Legion of Superheroes and Adventure Comics, things that are very near and dear to my heart. Came up with some big things during his tenure there. He created a number of members of and enemies of the Legion of Superheroes, including the Fatal Five, who have gone on to be featured in lots of other stuff outside Legion of Superheroes stories. There was a Justice League versus Fatal Five animated movie just a couple years ago. He created the Superman villain, the Parasite, which has become one of the biggest members of Superman's Rogues Gallery, one of the most well-known members of Superman's Rogues Gallery. Staged the first race between Superman and the Flash. Very famous issue, Superman 199, with a very famous cover. That was the first time that was been done, and it's been done many, many times since then. So he continued to write comics until he turned 18, and then left the industry and went to college, and decided he didn't like it. Ended up coming back into the industry, went back to write for DC for a while, but then very quickly moved over to Marvel. And before long, writing at Marvel, and then took on an editorial job. And this was at a period where there was a period after Stan Lee, Roy Thomas came in, was the editor-in-chief of Marvel for a while. And then after he decided to step down and concentrate on writing, Marvel could not hold on to an editor-in-chief. They went through something like five or six editors-in-chief within a year span. Basically everybody that was writing at Marvel took a turn. And so it came to Jim Shooter, and Jim Shooter is renowned for pluses and minuses during his time at Marvel. He was a controversial figure, but he was the guy that came in, got the books running on time, and created a lot of things and or oversaw the creation of a lot of things that were very, very important. And the things that have gone on to influence the Marvel movies today that Jim Shooter had a hand in. Jim Shooter was the editor-in-chief during Chris Claremont's run on the X-Men, when Chris Claremont came onto the X-Men. It is the bedrock of basically everything you love about the X-Men. Chris Claremont was the editor-in-chief that got Frank Miller onto Daredevil. Everything that you love about Daredevil, everything you've seen in a Daredevil movie, that's Frank Miller. Everything you've seen in the Daredevil TV series, that's Frank Miller. He was there for Walt Simonson's run on Thor, which again is the basis of a lot of the stuff you love about Thor. The John Byrne Fantastic Four run, that we've definitely seen a lot of things referenced from that, although, you know, there's obviously a lot of the Lee and Kirby stuff in there as well. Then he decided, hey, we're going to do something where we're going to get all the characters from Marvel together in one series. First time that was done. The first thing that was done in was something called Contest of Champions, which is not really held up as the first crossover, because it kind of was and it kind of wasn't. But then, and in fairness, this was happening at the same time DC was working on Crisis on Infinite Earths, a little something called Secret Wars.
Mm-hmm.
What's that movie coming out in a little bit here? Secret Wars. I haven't even scratched the surface yet of what Jim Shooter did for the comics industry and the world of pop culture. But he's somebody we're really going to miss. And, I was stopped dead in my tracks when this news hit. So, yeah, just keep him in mind. He is somebody that has meant a lot. Look into him. He means more than you might think he does. We've got to take a break. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line, and we are, Jeremy, we're right into the middle of the year. We're actually, I saw this online. This may make you cringe. As of midday July 1st, we are now closer to the year 2050 than we are to the year 2000.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't like the sound of that at all.
I kind of do. Kind of makes me feel like I'm living in the future.
Yeah. It does sound like that, but then like of ChatGPT, I don't feel like we're making any major technological advancements. No hoverboard from Back to the Future 2. No Jetsons flying cars. What are we doing?
It may be just because I want to get past the current time.
But sure. There's
yeah,
that.
Yeah. I don't know. But so given that we are halfway through the year now, we thought it would be a good time to take a minute and look at the movies that were released in the first half of the year and kind of talk about some of the movies that we like the most, whether they're currently in theaters. Some of the stuff will have made it to streaming by now. Some of it will be both, to be completely honest, because the way things are going anymore, there's some things that seem to have long legs in the theater despite the fact that they're already released on streaming. So, just, you know, we're not going to like rank this or anything like that. You know, a lot of times when we do these kinds of things, we go with a numerical list. We're just going to kind of talk, although I am going to start by talking about what is indisputably my number one movie of the year and is, in fact, the only movie I've seen twice in the theater this year. And that is Sinners. I just think this movie is just stupendous. I'm actually kind of dying to see it again, to be completely honest with you. There's nary a wrong step with it. There's maybe one or two very little things I could quibble with about it, but I think this is a movie that has some huge impact. I think it has a lot to say. I think it's very fun and entertaining on the surface level, but I think that it has a lot more to say beyond that about the cultural significance of music, about the Jim Crow era, about the history of how minorities are treated in this country, whether they be African-American or Asian-American or even the Irish, for that matter, because at one time the Irish were very much discriminated against, not just in this country, but around the world. And, you know, that should also kind of say something to you about how stupid prejudices are, because like today we just think of Irish people as white people. Because people are people, to quote Depeche Mode. And, this movie has so much to say, and it works on so many different levels, and everything about it is so meticulously well done. The music is outstanding. There's been much praise heaped on this sequence in the middle, this musical sequence that kind of spans across time, that looks into the descendants and the ancestors of the people that are involved in the movie at that time. And it has something to say too about the nature of selling one's soul, for lack of a better term. Yeah, I love this movie, man. I know you liked it a lot too. I think I may have liked it just a little bit more than you, but what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I don't know. I definitely think that this is a movie that represents a moment in film going, right? Like, Ryan Coogler makes really good movies. Black Panther was a cultural phenomenon. It was also a huge box office draw, and I think Sinners was one, like, this interesting story of the way that artists are kind of evaluated and assessed in Hollywood, and the framing of it as maybe not being the box office success that it needed to be, the way that he got rights to the film after X amount of years of it being released, kind of like
you
a
know,
meta comment.
But that was a short-term discussion that ended up being incorrect, because it has made a phenomenal amount of money at the box office.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was headed with it, is that there was this kind of defying of the odds that happened with the movie. And I think that that's one of many of Ryan Coogler's kind of like wins in terms of the way that, I guess that's what I'm trying to say. It was a win for Ryan Coogler as a filmmaker. When you listen to this guy geek out about the types of camera lenses that he was using during particular scenes, it makes you just really have a deep appreciation for this guy and the way that he speaks the cinematic language. I think that, you know, we've talked in depth about the movie itself, but it is just It's like, it's superficially, it's a fun horror movie. Aesthetically, it's a really cool movie. And then subtext-wise, it's got a whole lot more on its mind than simple thrills. So, like, I think there's something for everybody in Sinners.
I mean, superficially, definitely. It's also, superficially, in addition to being a really good vampire movie, it's also a really good gangster movie.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, so, and I mean, just something that people don't talk about a whole lot, and maybe it's because it's not the thing that jumps out at you, but like, it's a really funny movie. I think Smoke and Stack are interesting characters, and Michael B. Jordan's performance is really good. Yeah, we could spend the next hour talking about Sinners. I think it's fantastic. And let me go ahead and toss another one at you that I think both of us really enjoyed, and that would be Companion, yes. Starring Sophie Thatcher and Jack Quaid.
Easily my number two movie of the year, and it's very close.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. Well, they were like Sinners and Companion for the longest have been occupying a really similar spot in my mind for being like genre movies that are using, and I think most good genre movies are able to use them as a kind of platform to dig into some different ideas, and the themes in Companion are kind of about women's roles in society. You can watch it on multiple levels, similar to Sinners. And unfortunately, and this is bad, I don't know who the writer-director of the movie is. I need to look into that because I think this is their debut film. And if it's any indication, I think that this filmmaker could have like a really interesting and fun career moving forward. So, yeah, with that said, I really like Companion.
Directed by Drew Hancock.
There we go.
He wrote it as well. And I believe you're right. I do believe it is his first film. He actually doesn't have enough credits to even have his own Wikipedia page. Yeah, no, I love this movie too. I think it, again, has a lot of interesting things to say. It has some humor to it. It has some definite, like, what the hell, and I don't want to spoil any of the surprises about this movie. Great cast. You mentioned Sophie Thatcher, but Jack Quaid, Harvey Guillen, everybody's really good in this. And weirdly, the other thing I want to mention about this movie that I don't think I heard the song Lil Boo Thing before I saw this movie, and now I hear it everywhere.
Yep.
Like, since this movie came out, it has been following me around. But yeah, no, just a really, really smart movie. Didn't do like super great at the box office, but it didn't do bad. It was made for $10 million, made $36.7 million. So it made its money back and then a little bit. But check this out on streaming.
It's a tough movie to market because by discussing it too much, you kind of get into the very thing that like the ace that it has up its sleeve. But you and I also talked a little bit that like knowing the main twist doesn't ruin the movie by any means, because there's a lot more in store than just that.
Well, I think the fact that this movie has more than one twist, saves the fact that the kind of the main twist is, by virtue of kind of having to, is kind of spoiled by the advertising for the movie.
Mm-hmm.
That twist is kind of, it's kind of the meat. I mean, I don't mind saying this, the fact that, you know, this movie is about a couple that one of them is an advanced robot, basically.
Mm-hmm.
There are other twists to it, and it's played kind of like a twist, but it's not really the twist. It's kind of not the point of what's going on in this movie. Yeah, just really, really love this movie. And like, I have no problem with saying that's easily my number two. It's just about perfect. And I mean, Sinners is just a little bit more perfect, which is funny because I think that I could probably pick out one or two more flaws in Sinners than I can in Companion.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the overall impact of the movie puts it over the top. But yeah, just fantastic. Another movie that is kind of getting raked over the coals now because like it was well received critically, but it made money, but it didn't make as much money as people say it needed to make. Thunderbolts.
Yeah.
Thunderbolts asterisk, I guess I should say. Or we could just call it the new Avengers now because that's out there. Man, this movie is the best movie Marvel's done since Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. It is, which I know, you know, that wasn't that long ago. But, you know, there's been a number of movies that have been wholly watchable, but not like, oh, wow, that was great.
Yeah.
This was great. This movie was great. This movie had a lot to say about depression and about found family and overcoming mental illness. and still did it in an entertaining way that was still action-packed, still advanced the overall Marvel story. That's a lot to do. And I'm glad that Marvel isn't holding the performance of the film against the director, Jake Shearer. It seems like they haven't officially announced it, but they've all but announced that he's going to be directing the X-Men movie. And I think he's the right guy for it based on this movie, because he gets the team dynamic. He gets these greater themes that go beyond just the superhero theme. I mean, I think it's a fantastic film. What do you think, Jeremy?
Yeah. I had a lot of fun with it. It is right. If I was going to make a tier list, it would be right under the A tier. Like, you got your S tier, like the goated, the all-time greatest Marvel movies. You got your A tier, which would be the ones that aren't quite in that category. Like, okay, we'll say the Avengers movies are in the S tier, and then maybe your original Iron Man is in the A tier. We can debate the semantics. Maybe Captain America Civil War is in the A tier. And then right underneath that, I really do think that Thunderbolts should be in the conversation for being one of the top end MCU movies, period. I happen to like it a little bit more than Guardians of the Galaxy 3, but that's just my personal preference. And I do think that the director did a really good job of just making it a story that's grounded in character. And I think that's something that is so important in big budget movie making, and something that's so easy to get kind of lost in the sauce of all of the spectacle and all of those things. But this one just always brought it back to an ensemble that was really good, carried by just another incredible performance by Florence Pugh. I think Thunderbolts is great.
We've got to take a break. We'll be back tomorrow in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line, and we're talking about the best movies of the first half of 2025. And, you know, I wanted to, before you go into your next one, Jeremy, I just wanted to mention too, the first half of the year isn't always necessarily known for, like, the big, like, artistic statement movies. Like, and with that in mind, like, do I think a lot of these movies are going to end up on my year-end list? I think Sinners definitely will. And I think Companion probably has a good shot at it. But beyond that, I don't know. We'll see. I don't know if you feel the same way, Jeremy, but what do you have that you'd like to talk about next?
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I think that's another reason why we're not ranking them right now as well, because it is all still very fluid at this point. Although, like you said, there's definitely the ones that we like more than the others on the list, but to say, like, this is my number one and all that stuff, it's going to continue to evolve. But also worth mentioning, there's a lot of stuff that we don't see. So there's probably some great films out there that you have seen that aren't going to come up on that list. And if we're not talking about it, we would love to hear from you about it. So make sure to send an email. Julio, what's the email?
Email is gopensacola@gmail.com. So yeah, we'd love to hear from you anytime.
Absolutely.
But I know, Jeremy, you've seen a couple that I haven't seen already as well that I've been meaning to get around to, and hopefully I'll get around to in the second half, that now that we're into the second half of the year, But go ahead and hit me with your next one.
Yeah. So recently I went and saw The Life of Chuck. It stars Tom Hiddleston and Jacob Tremblay and Karen Gillan and Katie Siegel, a bunch of people that you're going to recognize from series like The Haunting at Bly Manor or The Haunting of Hill House, all stuff that director Mike Flanagan has worked on. Mike Flanagan is a filmmaker who's attached to the upcoming Clayface film for DC, something I'm very excited about. I'm sure Julio is as well.
Yeah, he's not directing it anymore, though, which is interesting.
That is interesting.
And they've done a rewrite on his script, but he still has a writing credit on it, but he's not directing it anymore. So
that's kind of a drag. Yeah. Because the guy does good stuff. He did Dr. Sleep, a great filmography, but this is a step out of the realm of horror for Mike Flanagan. And it is another Stephen King adaptation, which is very, familiar territory for Mike Flanagan. And it is a very introspective and sweet story about the impact of a person's life. And constructed in a weird format. It starts with Act 3 and then goes backwards, so the timing, the structure of the time is a little bit different. It also was shot in Iowa, which is, about 15 miles up the road from where I live, right up the road from Pensacola, and so it was really cool to see this downtown area is actually the city walk of Universal, for lack of comparison.
I don't think I realized that. Wow.
Really neat. Little local
sign. You mean I was that
screen.
Close to Karen Gillan and didn't get a restraining order? That's impressive.
really. I remember when the casting calls came up and Victoria even approached me with it and was like, do you want to go be an extra on this movie? And I was like, do I want to go stand in the heat for $15 an hour to be in this movie? No, not really. But after seeing it, I'm like, man, that would have been really cool, because I didn't know, and I should have known, that it was going to be a really special film. So anyways, The Life of Chuck is awesome. Criminally underseen. I think it was another one that was really tough to market, but if you get a chance, check it out.
I have not seen it yet, but I've heard nothing but good things about it. I know a few people that have seen it. I know the critics have been very kind to it, and I kind of wonder, whether this is going to go kind of the same route as another Stephen King adaptation, The Shawshank Redemption, which is a movie that is now hailed as one of the all-time greatest movies, but nobody went and saw it theatrically. Anybody that says they saw Shawshank to you in its original theatrical run is almost certainly lying to you.
You didn't see it in a theatrical run?
I didn't. No, absolutely not. I saw it on video.
No.
Yeah, no, I've never been one to lie about that, but lots of other people, I saw it in the theater. No, you didn't. No, you didn't. Not unless you saw it when it was brought back in the theaters, because they brought it back in the theaters later that year when it got a bunch of Oscar nominations, so people maybe saw it then.
Sure.
So, maybe you saw it theatrically, but you didn't see it during its initial run. Because nobody.
Very interesting. If you saw Shawshank Redemption, let us know. Julio, what's your next pick?
Well, I mean, Stephen King adaptations can be so hit or miss, but I think this has been a really good year for them, because the one I want to mention next is another Stephen King adaptation of one of his short stories. It's a movie called The Monkey.
Oh, yeah. Good call.
Written and directed by Osgood Perkins, who is a really interesting genre director and writer. The grandson of Anthony Perkins. Am I right about that? Grandson or son?
I thought son, but I wouldn't put money on it.
No, you're right. Sorry. He is the son, not the grandson. My bad. I just double checked it. Some of his stuff has been like pretty grim and dark. This one is much more of a dark comedy horror. It is
big time.
Really funny movie. But really dark, really there's a cursed toy monkey that causes these random horrific deaths around him. Just a lot of fun. Theo James in a dual role in the lead of this.
Great big year for dual roles too. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. But a lot of other fun actors in this, including Tatiana Maslany and Adam Scott and Elijah Wood.
Elijah Wood's role is so funny in it.
Yeah. Oh, Elijah Wood has been able to have this career that I just really love, where he just does stuff that he wants to do, kind of like his doppelganger Daniel Radcliffe. Like,
yeah.
they both made enough money early on that they can just do whatever they want and they have fun with it. I still think they need to be in something together. I would love to see a movie where they played each other.
That would be really good.
That would be hilarious. But really good little movie. Did pretty good at the box office. A budget of like $10 million and made $68 million. So that's a good return on that. And if you haven't seen this yet, I will tell you, it is very gory. There, you know, it does not. A lot of the kills are funny, it does not shy away from them being pretty grotesque. So just be prepared for that. It's not one for the kiddies, but if you like that kind of thing. Man, I just thought this was a really good time at the movies.
I couldn't agree more.
I enjoyed
it. You kind of got me thinking in two different directions now, because we could spin off in the direction of young Hollywood stars that make interesting choices later in their career, a la Robert Pattinson, or we can go in the direction that I'm more interested in at this particular moment, and that is movies about people meeting untimely demises in Rube Goldbergian circumstances, and talk about one that I know both of us have seen, that being Final Destination's Bloodlines. This is a movie that I was intrigued by the trailers, ended up getting a big old kick out of it. I was kind of curious what your thoughts on it were.
If I was to make a top five today, I am astonished to say it would be in my top five.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
amazing.
This is a movie I had no interest in seeing. I had seen none of the previous Final Destination movies. I was very much down on the whole idea, and I went to see it based largely on good word of mouth, good reviews when it was getting ready to drop. This movie is a lot of fun.
It is the
best thing about it to me is it is very meticulously crafted. Like, everything that is in this movie is there for a reason. There is no fat on the bone in this movie.
Yeah.
And then that final performance by Tony Todd, that was really just an epitaph for himself, was just...
Yeah, apparently they just kind of let him go in there and do his thing, which is a really sweet kind of story. And the way that the cast responded to just like having him on set and getting to, you know, be a part of this essentially like a farewell message that he was able to put on film in a franchise that he's been a part of ever since the beginning, it was really nice. It was really nice. And I feel like, for me, it was two really, really strong acts that kind of came undone after the scene at the hospital. I feel like everything that happened after the hospital was a little more meh for me, but a lot of the early sequences, including this crazy, like, retro-futurist space needle restaurant that they go eat in that you see in the trailer, like, just what a... awesome, awesome sequence. And then there's the garbage truck scene that was also equally awesome, because that character, the one who's I don't want to get into spoilers, but the brother of the main character's cousin, he was very, very funny, great screen presence. Hopes to see him in more stuff.
Yeah, played by former Pentagon guest Richard Harmon. And
was he in from before that?
A lot of CW stuff.
Okay, cool. Yeah, he was very good. Yeah,
we got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Hot town, summer in the city. Back of my neck getting dirt and gritty. Bend down, isn't it a pity? Doesn't seem to be a shadow in the city. All around, people looking half dead. Walking on the sidewalk harder than a match here. But tonight it's a different world. Go out and find a girl. Come on and dance all night. Despite the heat, it'll be alright. And babe, don't you know it's a pity the days can't be like the nights in the summer, in the city, in the summer, in the city.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line, and we've been talking about what we think are some of the best movies of 2025 so far as we get to the a little past the halfway point of the year at this point. Just a day or two past the halfway. It's like, you know, it's not November or anything. although, you know, given the heat lately, kind of wouldn't mind it being November.
Mm-mm.
Or at least
no,
like
same.
September, October. Like I'm the one that gripes about it being cold all the time too. So, you know, I don't know. Just move on to another movie that I really enjoyed this year. I think this is one I'm kind of in the minority on, to be completely honest. Didn't do that well theatrically, and I don't think the reviews were overall super great on this one. But I had a lot of fun with Death of a Unicorn. This is with,
okay. Yeah, I hadn't seen that one yet.
Yeah,
talk to me.
This is with Paul Rudd and Jenna Ortega. Great additional cast, including Tay Leone and Will Poulter, who's hilarious in this. Another dark comedy. I like dark comedies, and this is a dark comedy about father and daughter that are going to this trip to visit with his dying boss, who as he's getting ready to take over a lot of aspects of the company. And on the way to this remote lodge that he lives in, they hit a unicorn with their car, and they discover that the unicorn's blood has these enormous curative properties. And of course, the company is a pharmaceutical company, so they immediately start trying to figure out how to exploit this. And it's an interesting satirical movie. Like I said, very dark comedy. It's got some horror elements to it. It's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but I did have a lot of fun with it, and it just hit me in the right way. I like that kind of quirky stuff. It's probably not for everybody, but if you like dark comedy, if you have a quirky side to you with your movie going, I think it may be up your alley.
It was screaming to me, watch me on streaming, watch me on stream. It's like, I'll definitely see it. I'm interested in it. And like the fact that you thought it was good is reinforces that I will be checking it out.
And I don't think that's unfair.
$20.
I don't think that's unfair. It's not so, I mean, there's some effects stuff and things like that, but it's not such a big movie that it demands people going out to the theater. And I think that it's a double-edged sword because, man, I think people make these movies to be seen in theaters, and I do the same thing. You know, I'm just as guilty. There's stuff I've seen,
yeah,
you know, on planes or whatever, but you know, I want the theatrical business to survive too. And I want there to be a place for smaller movies in theaters. You know, it doesn't have to all be, you know, you only go to the theater when an Avatar movie drops.
Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. And going to see something like, going to see something smaller and supporting filmmakers on the biggest screen possible is always going to be the move. You know, life happens and gets in the way, but when a movie like Mission Impossible, The Final Reckoning comes out in the movie theater, you better believe I'm going to see it. This could potentially be, and I think is, as far as anything I've heard, the final Mission Impossible movie.
Until Tom Cruise decides he wants to make another one, yes.
It's possible. Yeah. I don't think he should. I think this was a really good swan song for the franchise. It does a lot of things right as far as nodding to the legacy of the franchise and Ethan as a character. Some of the set pieces are just incredible. There's this one that takes place like thousands of feet below the surface in the ocean in this submarine, and it is claustrophobic and tense and just so well executed. And this is the obligatory part where I say that Tom Cruise does most of his own stunts. For those of you that think that I'm not aware that stunts are performed in controlled environments and that he actually wasn't like down in the bottom of the ocean in a submarine, I get that. It's still really impressive. There's a sequence with a biplane later on in the end where he's just hanging on to the end of this plane. Also, of course, all of the stunt work is phenomenal. Really just a engaging experience in that way, but the espionage side of it was also really good. It's got an awesome cast, and I just feel like it had the right amount of reverence for everything that came before it without seeming like overly sentimental. There's a lot of flashbacks in it, a lot of reestablishing things from previous films. But, like, all in all, really good time at the movies. I love the Mission Impossible franchise, and I'm done now. I don't need any more.
I will say that people knocking Cruise on the stunt thing with the whole controlled environment criticism, it's kind of the same way I feel about the knocking wrestling is fake. Like, yeah, it's scripted and it's a controlled environment, but let's see you do it.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially at 62 years old.
Yeah. I mean, you know, credit where it's due. Yeah. You know, there's things you can knock Tom Cruise on, but I think the flip side of it is I don't think the dude's going to be happy till he kills himself making one of these movies.
Yeah. But yeah, that's true.
But yeah, I mean, to say that it's not an impressive feat or to try to take something away from that is kind of ridiculous. Now, you may not be impressed with the end product, or you may be, and that's completely fair. But to knock the man for doing what he does, I think is kind of silly.
Yeah.
I didn't like the movie as much as you did. I liked it.
Oh, okay.
Didn't love it. The spectacle side of it is awesome. I think the story.
That submarine scene was crazy, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. The one thing that I wish that they had done differently during that segment is it's something I had a little bit of a problem with in Sinners too, to be completely honest. Is there's places where I think what's going on screen can speak for itself, but then the filmmaker feels obligated to try to spoon feed it to the audience. And during that sequence was almost entirely silent. But there's this piece where he goes to get into a torpedo tube to get out of this wreckage of this submarine. And he says out loud to himself, torpedo tube.
Yeah, that was weird. I feel like that was a post-production thing.
We could have just left it to the audience to figure out that was a torpedo tube. I think that, you know, I certainly knew what he was going to do before he said that. Like, it was clear that that's what it was and that's where he was going.
Interesting.
And I'm an intelligent guy, but I'm not necessarily a rocket scientist. I think the majority of the audience either could have figured it out or would have eventually figured it out. Same thing at the end of Sinners, where they felt the need to flash back to something that happened earlier in the movie to kind of illustrate what was going on. I think that what was going on was clear enough that they didn't need to do those flashbacks. And it's one of my only nitpicks with the movie. And when I alluded earlier that Companion may be in some ways more flawless than Sinners, that's the main thing I was thinking of. But I think
two red shirts that show up in the bar at the end, but whatever, neither here nor there.
Yeah. But that part I didn't have a problem with, but it's the, you know, it's the necessity that Ryan Coogler felt to spoon feed what was going on there. Like, you should have been able to figure
it out. I blame test audiences for that stuff, man. And I might be wrong. Maybe it's a scapegoat, but I feel like some test audience was confused. So they had to explicitly spell it out, and it wasn't the filmmaker's intent. But
But I think that, at least I assume, I don't know. I've never been in a test audience for a film. So I don't know if these people are actually, you know, in a theater watching a film, or if they're being showed it on a video or something like that where they can be distracted.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Because it's the same issue that I had with a lot of the blowback on Game of Thrones that I've said many times. That people are not paying attention to what they're watching.
Insane take on that.
They're talking to each other. They're second screening. They're playing Candy Crush or something, and they're not totally paying attention to what's happening on the screen. And if you actually paid attention, the eventual heel turn would not be as much of a, oh my God, they just came out of nowhere with that. No, they didn't.
Julio says that the reason I think Game of Thrones season 8 sucks is because I was playing on my phone through the series. That's what I got out of that.
I mean, yeah, in part. I am not saying that it wasn't rushed. I'm not saying there weren't missteps, but I'm saying that the notion that Danny just turned on a dime is not correct.
Oh my God, dude. We have to have a full special dedicated to this again. Maybe the fourth or fifth time I watched it through, I was on my phone. Who knows? But anyways, whatever. What other movies you got?
You know, I mean,
is that it?
We don't have a lot of time left in the show. I'll mention quickly another movie I liked a lot but didn't love is Materialists.
Which I haven't seen that.
Yeah, it's the latest film from Celine Song, who was Oscar nominated for Past Lives a couple of years ago. This is starring Dakota Johnson in a love triangle with Pedro Pascal and Chris Evans.
Okay.
Had some interesting things to say, some good performances. I saw it with some people who really were down on Dakota's performance in particular. I thought this was one of the few things I've seen her in where I thought she was actually pretty good. But some other people were like, oh, I just wanted to smack her through the whole movie. It's like,
oh my God,
it's not Madam Web, dude.
Get over it.
But yeah, it had some interesting things to say. Was a rom-com without being the negative connotation of that. So
yeah, I'll check it out. I was curious about it.
Yeah. We're just about time. If you have one more you want to mention quickly, Jeremy, go for it.
Check out Black Bag. Steven Soderbergh's Black Bag. It was awesome.
Yeah, that's another one I've been meaning to get to. Heard very good things about kind of a mature adult thriller, not in the terms of like, you know, Pornhub adult, but you
unfortunately,
know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but been meaning to get to that, and hopefully we'll get a chance to get to it on streaming. That's about all the time we have for this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.